After Jesus was crucified and taken down from the cross, he was wrapped in a linen shroud. And the way the images on this, the Shroud of Turin are produced would be as if the body was laid on half of the cloth with the head in the center, and then the rest of the cloth is folded over to cover the rest of the body up. So when you open the cloth, you would have an imprint of the man in the shroud, which would be head to head, the frontal
okay.
image.
So if he's 6 feet tall, the shroud is about 12, 13 feet long.
The shroud is actually about 14 and a half feet long by 3.5 feet wide. Now, we don't have a full frontal imprint on it, so it wasn't wrapped exactly in the center, but you're correct. So that's roughly the dimensions.
All right, so they put the body in this shroud, and they loop it over, and then what do they do with it?
And then the shroud was placed in the tomb. Now, some people have argued, somehow the image of the man in the shroud was transferred to the cloth, and, you know, we'll talk about that possibility later.
Sure.
So many people have argued about the Gospels. Maybe it's take a second to talk about that quickly. But in Mark's Gospel and John's, it said that Jesus was wrapped in a linen shroud. The Greek word is syndon, which is just singular. In John's Gospel, he uses the Greek word orthonia, which is plural for linen cloths, meaning more than one. And there's been a little confusion about that. And all it is saying is there may have been more than one cloth involved. And we think there were several, that there was maybe a face veil placed over the man in the shroud, which another gospel refers to as a sudarian. There may have been a jaw band that wrapped around his jaw to keep it closed so it didn't open during rigor mortis. And then maybe the entire shroud was wrapped with, like, bandages to keep it all together. So there's no inconsistency. In fact, the Jews never buried people Egyptian style with bandages. So the high idea of a long winding cloth or linen cloth is consistent with the Gospels. But I wanted to bring that up because that's sometimes a source of confusion. Now, the question is, looking at the shroud, can we go back, like a forensic pathologist, and say what this man was subject to? And just looking at it in general, yes, it definitely looks as a person was crucified. And if you want to start in the head region, you notice in the face there are bloodstains or puncture wounds that seem to puncture all parts of the head. If you look at the front and the back, the puncture wounds go through the entire back of the head all the way up to the vertex. So what this really means is that if this person was crowned with thorns, that is, these puncture wounds where these blood stains are, were produced by a crown of thorns. It wasn't in the shape of a wreath or ringlet, but like a cap, like a shower cap, because it punctured all parts of the head up towards the vertex. Again, that would be consistent historically with if a person would have been crowned with thorns. You can see bruises on his face. His nose appears to be swollen. A lot of different things, you know, forensic pathologists can determine. Some of the more notable features would be, if you look at the back, I find this very fascinating, that there are like little, you could say like dumbbell-shaped marks covering the entire back.
Like he was whipped.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And this is a typical type of scourging instrument known as a Roman flagrum. In fact, we've found these in archaeological finds. And they were basically consisted of a handle, like a wooden handle, with two or three leather straps. And at the end of each of these straps usually would be like little lead balls in the shape of like dumbbells. So the person, this would rip into the person's skin, and then when it came out, would leave a deep and excruciating bruise.
It would just tear their flesh too, wouldn't it?
Exactly. And there's like over 100 of these dumbbell-shaped marks covering the entire back of the body. So this person was scourged significantly. In fact, some people have been able to calculate the angle at which the scourging radiated from and can deduce that two people scourged this person. One stood on the right and one on the left. And I think, if I recall correctly, the person on the right was a little bit taller than the person on the left. So incredible anatomical detail. Again, when you start thinking about painting hypotheses and different things, you know, forger to have come up with this would be just incredible. If you also look at the back where the person is scourged, you notice that there are like a quadrangular bruise marks over the shoulder. And medical experts estimate that these bruise marks over the shoulder would correspond to some heavy object placed on it after the scourging. And we know historically that victims of crucifixion did not carry the entire cross. It would have weighed over 300 pounds, just too heavy to carry. But right. They would have carried just a crossbeam or crossbar, which probably would weigh maybe about 80 pounds. And that would be consistent with the wound we see on the dorsal of the shoulder area of this person, that he was first scourged and then a crossbeam weighing about 60 pounds or so would have been placed over it. So again, extremely, anatomical detail.
And the image is of almost like a reverse negative. It's like a negative, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, yeah. In fact, when people ask me why did I get so interested in the shroud, I say it seems like only in the last 100 years has man developed the technology necessary to unlock its secrets, and that was in 1898. The first photographs of the shroud were taken. Photography was a fairly new art, and the Vatican commissioned a lawyer, an amateur photographer called Secondo Pia, to take photographs of the shroud. And up to this point, all people knew about the shroud was it had this very faint sepia-colored imprint of a man. It didn't look very lifelike. So Secondo Pia takes his picture and brings it back on May 28th, brings it back to his dark room and develops this large glass negative plate, and he says he felt he was seeing a miracle because instead of this faint, imperceptible image of a face, there was like a three-dimensional, beautiful representation of a human being. And he said he felt he was the first person in 1900 years to see what the man in the shroud actually looked like. And basically what it was is it was a positive imprint on his negative plate, meaning the lights and shadows were in the correct relationship, and which meant if you have a positive imprint on a negative plate, then the shroud itself was similar to a photographic negative. So that was, to me, one of the most important events or discoveries in the history of the shroud, because now we're saying, wow, this is something that existed like a photographic negative hundreds of years before the invention of photography.
Do you think, John, that the body merely evaporated, or did it just give off this burst of energy that, it just had that image on the shroud?
Well, that is the different theories. There are many theories, some that talk about purely chemical processes that may have produced the image. In fact, one of my first theories was involved in that. There are other theories that speculate the miraculous. And, we could go through those. And also, I have actually recently come up with a new theory, which may have a combination of both those factors. But that's one of the most difficult things about the shroud and how the image was produced. If you look at a process where you say the body came in direct contact with the cloth and transferred chemicals or perspiration or whatever directly to the cloth, mm-hmm. You wouldn't produce the resolution that you would see. For example, if you put ink all over your face and put a cloth up to it and pressed it and opened it up, it would be distorted. So a direct contact process doesn't explain what we see. Then if we look at a process which looks like a vertical projection, would be like a laser, a direct projection of the body straight onto the cloth, you also wouldn't get the image. You wouldn't actually have enough information. So either process would not work. Together they may, but it has to be filtered in a certain way. And that's one of the problems. If you calculate the way the image was produced using all these different possibilities, you really don't come up with something.